Hello and welcome to episode 150 of SMARTS, which as you know stands for Sesquicentennial Makes Acronyms Really Truly Scarce, or Smarties Milestone Achieved Reaching Their Sesquicentennial, or Sesquicentennial Marks Achievement Reached Through Solidarity, or I have 150 of these. Is that okay? One more. Satellites methodical. There we go. Assembly reveals thinker's stratagem.
All right, that's four.
You want me to keep going?
Do all 160.
Do 150. Sesquicentennial means achievements rioting the Smarties.
Five.
Oh, man. Okay. Sesquicentennial machismo. Acts really, truly stupendous.
Six.
Sesquicentennial. mandates are really, truly sucky.
Seven.
Sesquicentennial. Meanie. acts riotously tough. Sometimes.
All right, I'll take your word for the others.
Okay. yeah, I put them in a different note file. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, I am your host, Julia Cooley of internet fame, a Dash podcaster, and with me, as always, for the 150th time, is Trevor, a.k.a. Rutiger Q Podcaster.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, do you have some special news for us?
I do have a little bit of news.
Hooray! Okay.
So we have the first concrete information, aside from a couple of shows that we knew were going to exist, the first concrete information about DC Comics' upcoming digital service, whatever it ends up being, not quite sure what to call it. It's going to be called DC Universe, which is obviously a name that has, you know, a lot of common usage, just referring to
I see what they did there.
Referring to the, well, right. The universe of the comics. So we know the name. They unveiled the logo, which just looks like you'd think it would. But they also revealed logos for the upcoming shows, and there's a little bit of new stuff and a little bit of changes to some old stuff. So we knew about Titans, the live-action Titans show. That got a logo. We knew about Young Justice returning for Young Justice Outsiders. That got a logo. And we knew about the Harley Quinn animated series based largely on the current comics. That got a logo. We also got the reveal of a new show we didn't know about, a live-action Swamp Thing show, which is going to be produced by James Wan, who's doing Aquaman right now and did a bunch of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Is that the one that kind of slipped on Twitter?
Yeah, like I think Jeff Johns might have let that one slip on Twitter. Okay. The other change that was mentioned in some of the press around this is that the Metropolis series, which we talked about, which was going to be produced by the Gotham producers and focus on Lois Lane and Lex Luthor before Superman debuts solving science crimes, is absent from this slate, and the scuttlebutt is that it's being retooled and has been pushed back.
Okay.
So if it happens, it'll happen later and may not bear any resemblance to what we originally talked about. Might have different people involved, might have a different premise, might not actually happen. But I guess my guess is that they weren't happy with where the development process was leading, and so they put it on hold and replaced it with the Swamp Thing show they were planning on doing anyway and pushed it back to later. So odds are, when it debuts this fall, we'll get Titans and Young Justice, and then my guess would be like maybe early next year we'll see Swamp Thing and Harley Quinn and Metropolis, if it happens, will be like fall 2019, if then.
I see. Wow.
And I'm going to continue to add to it. The other thing, too, is that it kind of, in keeping with my suspicions from when this initiative was first announced, I said, it really seems like from the way they're talking about it, it's going to be more than just like Netflix for DC-only stuff. It really sounds like they're talking about doing more than just audiovisual stuff. It seems like they might be packaging other things in there. Again, they refer to it as like a platform with all sorts of membership perks and so on like that. I continue to think that when you subscribe to this, you'll get more than just exclusive shows and possibly like a back catalog of older shows, but you're also going to get, you know, things like maybe Netflix style access to DC's back catalog of comics or something like that, or behind the scenes videos, or, you know, secret feeds that give you access to other stuff. It's going to be more like a an all-access membership service to everything DC and not just a DC streaming service, mm-hmm. you know, which is what most people talk about it in terms of. So, you know, this is all we know for now. At least we have a name and some more details and some logos. I don't know when. This just came out of nowhere. This wasn't announced at a convention or something, but my guess would be maybe we'll get more details at San Diego Comic-Con in a couple of months. Mm. Because if it's launching in the fall, they're going to want to get people excited about it a few months ahead of time with more than just a name and some logos. They're going to want to start giving out details. So my guess would be, and then maybe at San Diego, we'll actually learn like pricing, how much, what you get for it, you know, details like the, how you subscribe to it. Will there be an app or will it just, you know, will there be an Apple TV app and an iPhone app? Or will it just be like, I don't know what else they would do. Will it just be like a, you got to go to the website? I really doubt that, but we'll find out more details about that as it goes on. And that's it. That's the only bit of news.
Ooh. Well, I have one more smarts news item to add, is that next week there will be no show because you're traveling.
That's right. Well, unless we, unless we do a quick show over the weekend, but that's, potentially, you know, unless there's huge breaking news, we probably won't do that. So yeah, probably no show next week.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I just wanted to mention.
So what was your comic of the week?
So this week I chose Batman number whatever it is.
46.
46. Hooray. Did I choose Batman 45? Because that sounds familiar.
No, I don't think either of us chose 45.
Oh, okay. So in this issue, it was the continuation from last time where Booster Gold screws up, is the summary. He basically did a flashpoint for Batman where he saves...
Yeah, the wags online are calling it Batpoint.
That's wonderful. Short story... Bruce's parents are saved. Bruce lives out his life under their tutelage and guidance and never becomes the Batman. Dick Grayson becomes the Batman but is absolutely okay with killing because reasons. Catwoman goes crazy and is...
Yeah, she's wearing like the Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman outfit, but she only speaks in cat sounds. Jason Todd is selling like car security equipment.
Yeah, fantastic.
Tim Drake is working in a cubicle. I think we saw Duke Thomas, and I forget what he was up to, but they checked in with a bunch of this. Obviously, Damian doesn't exist.
Right.
And being Jokered is like a thing that happens
regularly,
a lot.
Yeah.
We still don't know, like, was there ever the Joker? Like, Ra's al Ghul looks mm-hmm. like he's got designs on the city, but everybody else is kind of, it's like, there's everything's on fire, and everybody's being turned into a Joker, and everybody just sort of accepts it as the way it is. So I don't mm-hmm. know how much fleshing out we're going to get of this world. I mean, when they did Flashpoint, there was not just the miniseries, but there were, like, 15 other tie-in miniseries.
Right.
So what's happening with Hal Jordan in this world? What's happening with Green Arrow in this world? They're not going to do that here, so I don't know how much embellishment we're going to get on all these little details, but it does feel like a nice lived-in...
Yes.
Alt world.
So first off, the art is fantastic and wonderful. And the reason I chose it for my comic of the week is because we got to see so many interesting things. Booster is trying to fix what he did. So seeing Booster's one-liners and personality traits and things of that nature come through, it's just hilarious. And he's trying to set up a meet-cute between him and Catwoman. So he breaks her out of Arkham and... unbeknownst to him, but known to us, she's legit full-on overboard nutso. No disrespect to anybody with mental health issues, but I mean, she is like a killer and locked up behind bars at Arkham, and he sets her free. Not the smartest move.
And everybody gets killed.
And everybody gets killed.
The Waynes, yeah. Batman, her...
Yep.
So that at the end they recreate the scene
Batman,
of Bruce like on
Batman.
His knees,
yep.
you know, screaming at the sky with everybody he loves dead, except there's a bunch
around
of
him. Yeah.
So I really enjoy this, and I'm like a mark for Tom King. We pick Batman and Mr. Miracle and everything he works on pretty regularly for our comics of the week. But I did have an issue
with
this storyline, and it's one that you see a lot when a lot of people write Booster Gold, is that he comes off as too dumb here.
Mm.
Like compare him here to the way he was in like the recent Action Comics arc where he took Superman back in time but Superman kind of forced him to take him back in time to Krypton to see what happened to his father. Like, I mean, most iterations of Booster Gold start off really
dumb, but then there's a personality.
Well, not dumb. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. He's just a screw up. Like he starts off as being like an irresponsible screw up, but then he gradually learns more responsibility, or it's revealed that he was secretly more responsible all along than you thought. It's just he kind of, that's just his personality,
that
he plays the fool.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's like he almost seems like, but does he have like brain damage or something? Like, why would he think that in this, like, he understands, I mean, this is his job, is to fix, is mm-hmm. to patrol time and prevent alternate realities. What make, like, does he think that if he just brings Catwoman, like, it's like he didn't understand how reality works. It's like, if I just bring this Catwoman and this Bruce together, they'll realize that they were destined to be together in another reality. Mm-hmm. That doesn't even make any sense. They would have no knowledge of that other reality. Okay. And he should know that. Like, it's like he doesn't understand how, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Just basic stuff about how anybody that lives and operates in this world would know that, no, they're not going to realize they were destined for each other immediately because of that other thing. Like, it's like he doesn't understand how his job works.
Right.
Like, that's, he can be a screw up, but he should at least, like, he should know what he's doing, but, like, make mistakes along the way. But mm-hmm. he should know the basic rules of his job. Like, the idea right. that he would, I can kind of buy that he would try to do this for Batman, but everything is why I didn't have as much a problem with the previous issue. Because, like, oh, I'm going to do this, and then I'll fix it. And he'll be, like, super thankful or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Skeets gets destroyed, so he can't fix it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was kind of on board there. And, like, but even then, I was like, well, but he wouldn't remember this. Like, you change reality and you change it back. Neither version of him is going to remember the other version. So right. he's not going to know what to thank you
There's
for.
There's no
but,
favors,
but even
yeah.
so, like, okay, maybe he could tell him about it or show him video recording of it or something. Like, mm-hmm. so, kind of. But then as soon as Skeets mm-hmm. gets destroyed, and now he's like, I know, I'll take Catwoman and bring her here, and they'll realize that, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know. I'm talking.
You know, that's
circles,
a fair criticism, but it's one of those refrigerator moments because I was so along for the ride, and I really love Booster Gold as represented in the cartoons that we saw, Brave and the Bold, and you know, what was the other one that we enjoy? The 10 minute
the Justice League action.
Justice League.
Yeah,
action.
But even then, if all of reality got changed underneath him, he would at least like understand what was going on and
right.
in theory how to fix it. Even if he had no idea how to actually go about it or made mistakes while doing it, he would at least understand the basic rules of
You're absolutely
how
right.
this stuff works.
I was just along for the ride. Yeah. I just sort of suspended disbelief. I didn't even consider that because
and then he starts rambling
yeah.
to Catwoman in a way that like that doesn't even make any logical sense. Mm. It's like it really played him like Homer Simpson level dumb, as opposed to like a guy who understands stuff mm-hmm. and is actually pretty bright, but just can't help but get in his own way all the time, mm. or sometimes out for himself a little too much. Like it's I'm surprised because Tom King is usually really good at nailing characters just very, very quickly through dialogue. Like you really get a sense of who this guy is, and they always ring
yeah.
true. Like Superman shows up for a couple of issues, and he seems like Superman. You know,
it's right.
not, it doesn't seem like some weird extrapolation, cartoonish Dudley Do-Right version of Superman. It seems like the real Superman. Yet
right.
here, this seems like somebody described Booster Gold to him in vague terms, uncharitably, and he wrote it from there without ever having actually read a Booster Gold comic. I don't for a second think that's what happened,
mm-hmm.
but it comes off that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't. Maybe there's some sort of reversal coming up where we discovered that, you know, he is actually under the influence of someone, or he's playing dumb, or he has a master plan or whatever, but I can't really see how that would not come across as contrived.
Or so why that would result in murder as a deliberate part of his plan.
Yeah, so while I did enjoy reading the issue, it kind of nagged at me a little bit. He really seemed out of character to me.
Oh, that's a fair criticism.
And it's a character that people often get wrong because they often just play him
as
the idiot, which is not, you know, which is really not true.
Yeah.
But and
yeah.
I would think he would know that. But still.
Well, thanks for shredding my comic
of
the week.
No, I really enjoyed it too, but it kind of got on my nerves. Like you see this
understand.
With characters. Like sometimes Batman shows up somewhere and he just acts like a complete jerk for no reason. And
yeah.
it's like, yeah, that's someone who is trying to summarize Batman briefly, but doesn't really know how to do it without making them seem out of character.
Right.
And it's kind of the same with Booster Gold here. It's just, this is a character he doesn't write very often, and he's giving you like a very surface level version of him, but it's very misleading as to the real character, I feel. And that kind of gets on my nerves.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, but you're absolutely right.
The best writers writing like team ups and team books. Like I know I mentioned Grant Morrison's JLA every week it seems like, but when some minor character, when Animal Man, well, he basically created that version of Animal Man, so that's not fair, but when Mr. Miracle or Animal Man or whoever would show up for like one page, or mm-hmm. Firestorm would show up for one page,
mm-hmm.
and it would be like, and he would just have like one funny line, like one really clever line, and like, that's Firestorm. Like, and he wouldn't feel like when Martian Manhunter, what was it, like the Oracle, like Martian Manhunter connected everybody's minds, all the superheroes' minds together on the planet via digital telepathy,
sure.
so Oracle could talk to them all.
Mm-hmm.
and Oracle's talking to Firestorm, and she's like, sorry if this is a little weird, and Firestorm's like, don't worry about it, I'm used to having people talking to me in my head. And you're like, that's a really, you know, that's a really smart thing, yeah, for Firestorm saying. Like, yeah, that's, he wouldn't be like, oh, what's going on? I don't know, like, because, mm-hmm, you know, anyway. So
that's a fair criticism.
It's a little, it was, it took me out of it a little
bit. So I have a question then. This is a silly question, but am I remembering correctly that it was in Justice League Action that we had the storyline where Booster Gold sort of reveals to Batman that he's actually been a guardian of time, yeah, the entire time?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That was a 10-minute episode that, yeah, really nailed him.
That was really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
And that version of Booster Gold is definitely a lot more of a slacker, mm-hmm, dumb jock kind of guy most
on
of
the
time.
Surface.
But they, because they did that episode early on, you now have you have context for that.
Yeah.
But to me, like, there's a difference between playing him like a dumb jock, which, mm-hmm, he kind of is a bit of a dumb jock, and playing him as like just really not understanding basic causality,
mm-hmm,
and how,
that's
and
right,
how human interactions and emotions work. And, you know, like, it's just he almost seems like he's,
right,
I don't know, like yeah, like he had some sort of head injury or something. Like, is he okay? Like,
why would he do that? Yeah,
legit wondering. I mean, I guess by this issue, he's been here. Like, Skeets was destroyed, and it's been like a few months.
Yeah, you can tell by the shag
of
on
him
his
living
beard
in this, yeah, really messed up world.
Yep.
So maybe he's kind of lost it a little bit.
That's
but,
kind of
but that's
of
a little
how
out of character too. Like, he wouldn't completely
sort of
go insane after 3 months of living in a dystopia. Like, he's got it more together than that. If this were like his first adventure, that'd be one thing. But he's been doing this, depending on, you know, the vagaries of continuity for years at this point. So
right,
he would have a bit, he'd have his sea legs a bit more than he does here, or his time legs
instead
or something.
Instead of trying to, yeah, set up a meet cute. Anyway.
Anyway, but I did enjoy it. It's just stuff like that bothers me when a character just shows up and is like,
poorly represented.
What is, like, yeah, this is not even, this is like a cartoon
right
version.
I gotcha.
So my pick of the week was DC Nation number 0. This was the, this was either 15 cents if you bought the physical copy, or free, I think, if you got it on the digital platforms. Sort of, anthology preview of the big summer storyline. So we got Tom King doing a one-off Joker storyline leading up to the Batman Catwoman wedding. We got the No Justice crew, the writer, Scott Snyder, Joshua Williamson, and Jim Stinian the Fourth, and Jorge Jimenez on art doing a 10-page lead into the No Justice weekly series, which starts this week. And Brian Michael Bendis and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez doing a preview of his Superman takeover, specifically like the Man of Steel miniseries, which starts at the end of the month. So I enjoyed these to varying degrees. I would say I probably enjoyed, after just lagging on Tom King for 15 minutes, I think I probably enjoyed Tom King's Joker story the most out of these three.
Yeah, I have
because
to say,
it was,
yeah,
the No Justice pages. I love Jorge Jimenez and I really like these writers, but I feel like the No Justice pages were just so busy with narration, and just the art was so crammed in every panel that I didn't really get much of a sense of the story that was happening. It's just like, look at all this crazy stuff, and it all looked beautiful, but it didn't leave much of an impression on me.
Right.
The Bendis Superman story I really liked. It's hard to judge a writer. I mean, it's his first DC work on however long he's taking over Superman. I feel like he had a good voice for the characters. I enjoyed the way he wrote Perry White. The big mystery that's set
that was
up.
Awesome.
Big mystery that's set up here is that Lois Lane is not working at the Daily Planet, and there's some acrimony there from Perry. Mm-hmm. But he's trying to break it to everybody else in a way that he's kind of like shows that he has Clark's back, but Clark is actually kind of embarrassed by it because is kind of making a bigger deal of it than he would want. And so there's like the interactions are interesting. And then they introduce a couple of new characters working the planet, one of whom seems like has mysterious motives and
or
plans.
Background, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like he had...
I'm interested in her.
I feel
it
like
was
he had
just
a,
one
I feel
line.
Like he had good voice. And of course, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez has been... I mean, he's one of the iconic DC artists from the past 30 or 40 years. He's he's a veteran. And so getting him for this was a real get.
So I have two things to say about... What was her first name? But her last name is Good.
Yeah, Robinson Good, I think it was.
Yeah, she had me at one line. She said, just give me till Wednesday, because by Wednesday I'll own this place. That was an excellent line. I like it very much. It's I love a good cocksure line. It's like here's a character that you really want to pay attention to, and that definitely snaps your attention.
The line in here, I'm sorry, did you have something else you were gonna say?
Yeah, the second thing I was gonna say is I wonder about why she's wearing a cape. That little tiny little cape thing.
I think it's just fashion. It's
a
not
very
supposed to...
strange fashion statement, I gotta tell you. I've worked in lots of office settings, I've never walked into work with a mini cape. It's just
maybe you would have done better if you'd
really,
you know, more opportunities for advancement.
I knew you wanted
up.
To say that, but your face was like, well, I shouldn't finish this sentence.
let me see what you think. So there's one line here that Superman says that kind of seems like, and this is, everybody is examining this with a fine tooth comb, because Bendis was a huge deal over at Marvel, but especially as time went on, he became a bit more polarizing because of his specific authorial quirks, one could say.
Okay.
So he comes over and starts writing Superman, and people are like going over every line with a fine tooth comb, like, oh man, are there quirks? And like, is this going to be good or is this going to be bad? They're really examining this every aspect of this 10 pager. So there's one line that he has that seems like it's kind of, you come down on either that's a great Superman line, or that shows he doesn't understand the character.
Divisive.
Which is when he's talking about, you know, a lot of the sort of odd, quirky behavior that the other people at the planet have, and he has a line where he says, "I love humans." I just say it like that, and it sounds completely out of context. But I feel like in context, he's saying it with this sort of like, to me anyway, it comes across as he's saying it with this almost not paternal love, but this sense of like, in the way that you would, you know, you have a family or whatever, and you're out and about, and you're like, oh man, like I really love babies, or I really love dogs, or something like that. Like in a way that it doesn't mean that you see yourself as better than them necessarily. It's, you know what I mean?
It can come off that way.
But people who read that are like, because people have, you know, hot takes on Superman, but a lot of people are like, no, he should see himself as like as one of them, right? Like he doesn't see himself as better than them, or really even apart from them. So that's not something that he would say, because in a lot of ways he kind of considers himself human. But then other people would look at that and say, no, it shows that he, you know, he considers himself to be one of them in a way, but he also knows that he's different in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But he cares so much for humanity that he can look at their little foibles and they only endear them to him more. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of the way I took it. And so I'm. You know, where do you fall on that? Because I can see why that would tick some people off, but I feel like the people that it's ticking off are people that are looking at it, not necessarily looking for things to complain about, but are kind of.
So I can answer your question, because I do remember it now that you re-bring it up. I did bump on it when I read it, and I was like, that's a little hoity-toity for him to say. So that was my instinctual reaction, not having any background information on who. I don't even remember his name. Michael Bendis. What's his first name again?
Brian
Michael Bendis. I don't have any relation to any of his work before this. I just kind of recognize his name just because I've heard it so often being around you. But yeah, I did bump on that line. And as an objective party, that's the first way that I would read that line. It's a little bit above, a little bit separate. And knowing Superman as I do, I did not ascribe to him what is the word that I'm looking for?
A distance?
Patriarchal. No, the one that's above. Condescending. There you go. That's the word.
But I wouldn't take it as
condescending.
I can see both sides of it. Yeah. I mean, I remember a great line from Jeff Loeb's Superman,
that's
Batman,
Run,
when Supergirl was introduced, and she was talking to Superman about humans. She's like, oh, they do this, and you know, he's referring to them as in the third person, like they do this, and Superman would say, you know, Kara, there's no them, it's just us, right? I always remember that line. Like he doesn't see like they're the humans and I'm Superman. He's like, no, I'm one of them. It's just that I can do certain things that most of them can't, and so that lets me help
them. And that's why I bumped on that line when I read it, because I didn't think that he would actually bring it up as humans. I love people. Is what he would say?
Yeah, but to me, like, that's almost interchangeable. It's just because they're all humans, and the people he's talking about are all humans, and so the two words are synonymous. I know what you mean, but I'm saying it's kind of like a distinction without a difference.
Yeah.
But I think that it's definitely more Silver Age-y, where he loved humanity but would never for a second forget that he was
different.
In a way that, I mean, I couldn't see... a lot of modern versions of Superman delivering that line. Like, I didn't see the animated version really do it.
Yeah.
But I can see the Christopher Reeve version thinking something like that, because their Clark Kent was very much a disguise for Superman, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas most modern versions, Clark Kent is kind of the real guy, more or less, maybe a bit more nebbish, and Superman is just like a different outfit that he wears to do his job. Mm. But for someone like Superman who grew up, it's funny, so for someone like Superman, as if Superman is synonymous with the Christopher Reeve version of Superman, in my head he kind of is, but that version grew up and I guess you could say like the Smallville version too, but that version grew up always feeling like an outsider, and then he went and he spent like 10 years in the fortress with Jor-El, and he comes back and he's kind of disguising himself to fit in amongst regular people. He would never for a second forget that he is different from them. It doesn't mean better. Mm-hmm. It just means different. People are different.
Right.
Like, that's one of the things that he espouses too, which is that like we should celebrate our differences, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that I can do certain things that you can't doesn't make me better than you. It just means that I'm better equipped to help you in these ways, and you're better equipped to do, like,
exactly.
You know, the reason why he looks up to Lois is because she's a better reporter than he is. She can, she can, you know, make the world better in her own way. And there's a certain way that he's equipped because of his genetics to make the world better. And so that's the advantages that's that he chooses to take advantage to. But he doesn't for a second forget that he's different. It's just that in his mind, that would never mean better. I guess that's the line that I would draw.
It's interesting because I can picture Christopher Reeve's Batman. Oh my God.
Jeez.
Christopher Reeve's, Superman saying that and having nothing but affection in it.
Exactly.
Just an innocent affection.
He would say it with a loving smile in the way like a doting parent
just
would talk
like
about
said,
their kid.
Truth, justice, and the American way. And it sounded completely 100%
like I could picture him in the fortress talking to holographic Marlon Brando about what he did that night and the things that he saw. And I can just see him sort of like having a little aside to himself where he just like, sort of shakes his head and smiles and says, "I love humans," or something like that. And I can't deliver it the way that he would, but to me, like that's
I understand you
and but he admires them in a way, like in the way that he, you know, like he in a way that he thinks that, and in a way he thinks of himself almost as less courageous than them because it's so hard for him to be hurt, so of course he's able to do these things,
right?
But regular people are hurt so easily and live such short lives, and yet they're still like, able to do all these amazing things,
like
and laugh and love and all this
he
stuff
can
and
jump in front of a speeding train, but he's in awe of the person that would pull a child out of a speeding train because they themselves could get hurt,
and that's, you know, and he would do the same thing if he didn't have powers, but it's like he always forgets that, like he almost feels like he has to live up to their example because of how fragile they are and yet how much greatness they still accomplish. So it's, you know what I mean? There's a lot of layers there, but people went over it with the fine tooth comb, and I was curious what, because that was that one line was like a lightning rod for people on both sides of the issue, saying that this shows that he really understands the character, or this shows that he doesn't have any idea.
Incredibly
I would grant
divisive,
you that it's a bit more, you know, Silver Age-y than a lot of modern takes, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. It just, and the whole story kind of, I mean, it was definitely, it came across as a throwback in some ways. A lot of it was the art, which is by like a veteran artist. It wasn't by the new hot artist. It was an artist who arguably had his quote unquote peak in terms of his visibility and popularity 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's going to have some of that old timey flair. Plus, they just brought the red trunks back and they're reintroducing a lot of the classic supporting cast that hasn't gotten a lot of play recently. So it's going to seem old timey in some ways. And so I feel like if that's his take, if his take is more like a, archetypal classic Superman as opposed to like a new edgy Superman, I'm on board for that, because I think, you know, we got years of the new edgy Superman with the new 52. I'm ready for, like we've had since Rebirth, I feel like, a more classic, you know, square jawed, hands on his hips Superman. Not to say the characterization should suffer, but you don't need to work so hard to try to make him seem cool and hip. Every time someone tries that with Superman, it always seems really disingenuous and fails, and then the character reverts back to the classic form inevitably.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like might as well just like turn into that and just, you know what I mean? And just
just ride the wave. Yeah.
Anyway, so those are my thoughts on that one.
That's
so you ready for your pop quiz?
Yes.
Okay, so inspired by a game that I heard on a podcast this week. I know we've done quizzes before about members of various super teams.
Oh boy.
But what I'm going to do here, I think we might have done something similar at some point, but I've got 8 of these. I've got, for each one, I've got 5 members of a team.
Okay.
And I will give you the names in succession, and we'll see how long it takes you to know what team I'm talking about.
Okay.
So if you get it after the first one, you get 5 points, but if you have to wait until I've given you all 5 names, you only get 1 point.
Good luck tracking the points for this.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Are you ready?
Yes.
Hal Jordan.
Green Lantern.
Now remember, if you say it after one and you're wrong, you get 0 points, right? So there's an incentive to wait until I've given you multiple.
You're going to be like that? Okay, you're going to be like that? Okay.
You don't get multiple guesses. All right, so I didn't explain that properly. So I'll start again, and you can either say do the same thing or hold back a little bit.
All right. Okay.
Hal Jordan, Kyle Rayner,
Green Lantern Corps.
All right. Yeah. So you get 4 points.
Well, what'd you do that for? No, I deserve 5. I said
no because you didn't understand the rules. So you might not have done that if you had understood the rules.
Oh, I kind of want to keep. Okay.
Number 2. Robin, Kid Flash, Speedy.
Oh, the Teen Titans.
Right. So you get three there.
Yay.
So you're at seven so far. You got to help me keep track of this.
Okay.
All right. Number three. Flash, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, Sandman, Our Man.
What? Justice League of... Oh, Justice Society.
Correct.
Yay!
So you get one. So okay. That brings you to eight.
Okay.
I think. Yes, eight. All right, number four.
Mm-hmm.
Batman, Black Lightning, Geo-Force.
What?
Halo, Katana.
The Dark Knight crew.
No, the Outsiders.
Was it really the Outsiders? I was going to say that, but I didn't know Batman was part of the Outsiders. I thought
the series was called Batman and the Outsiders.
Well, it was called...
He formed the team when he left the Justice League because they weren't cool enough.
Okay.
All right. Number five.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Blackhawk, Dove, Black Canary.
Birds of Prey?
Yes.
Yay!
So you get three.
Yay.
So that brings you to 11. All right. Number six.
Mm-hmm.
Supergirl, Guy Gardner, Zelias Zox.
What?
Dexstar, Atrocitus.
Atrocitus is on a team with these people? What? I have no way of knowing that. I'm going to say the Bongo Bungees.
No, the Red Lantern Corps.
Supergirl was on the Red Lantern Corps?
Briefly.
What? Why? And Guy Gardner?
Oh, yeah, for quite a while, for like a year.
Because he was...
It was angry. Really good, too.
Oh, was
he turned them into a force for good, kind of. He turned them into like a gang of like...
Beat-em-ups for a reason.
Bikers, you know, like really mean biker gang that's still out to do good as opposed to like a bunch of rage-fueled zombie types.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay.
Number seven.
Uh-huh.
Supergirl. XS. Superboy.
Oh, is this the Legion?
Yes.
Yay!
All right, so that gives you...
14.
Three from that one? Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Because you got... Yes. So, 14. All right, last one. Number eight.
Huh.
Beast Boy. Rebus. Flex Mentalo.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Is this the Doom Patrol?
Yes.
I didn't know Beast Boy was on the Doom Patrol.
Yes, he was.
Whoa, cool. Okay. Right,
17.
Yeah.
So you got 17 out of a possible...
8 times 40.
40. That's not bad.
Hey, I'll take it. Especially since I never guessed after one. That'd be a pretty high risk.
So should we move on to our shows?
I am ready.
Okay, so we have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Krypton, Gotham, Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so this one really focused mostly on... Got a little bit of Coulson, but mostly focused on Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
Turning into, so I don't know. I don't know how to feel about this. Like, he's got a cool outfit, and you know the actor plays it to the hilt. But I feel like it seems a little too easy, a little too sudden. You know,
yeah.
Because he's been developed so well over the. I mean, he was never the most interesting character, but the actor plays him well, and we've known him for long enough now that we're like, oh, I get it. He's like a hardcore military man who puts his country first.
Yep.
And he doesn't really trust. People with powers or S.H.I.E.L.D. in general, but he likes Coulson and he's learned that Coulson usually wants to do the right thing. And so he'll work with him and he kind of trusts him sometimes. And you know, like we've seen enough shades to him now that like within, he gets the gravitonium in there. And then by like 5 minutes into this episode, you can see where it's going, that he's right. Going to get more and more detached from reality and his humanity and become like power hungry and everything. I don't know. It like, I don't know if I necessarily want them to reverse it, but it seems like such a quick, I don't want to say like character assassination, but you know what I mean? Like it's taking a really interesting supporting character and just over the course of just minutes of screen time, turning them into a crazy bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I don't think that I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go, if they're going to have him be the big threat. I think that the idea, from what I saw in previews, might be like they want Daisy to power up so that she can stop him. Hmm. So she might still be the destroyer of worlds.
Okay.
Because it would be too easy for them to like, oh, he decides to take the gravitonium and now he becomes a big bad guy and he's the one that might destroy the world. So they have to stop him. Like that would seem way too easy to me.
See, my thinking was that she would have to face off against him because she, I mean, usually when the hero meets the big bad villain, they get their butt kicked twice, and then on the third time is when victory happens. And so she's already got her butt kicked by him once. Now the second time is re-strategize, go there, fail again. And then the formula demands that the third time is probably going to happen in the season finale, and she takes him down. So my thinking is that the battle between him possessing the gravitonium and her having some strategy or something go wrong is what cracks open the world. But by then, they'll probably have, like, a plan and somehow break the loop and happy ending. That is my prediction. But that's what I was thinking when she got hurled across the room by him. Also, can I just make a quick aside about his costume? First off, excellent. I really dig it. And second off, it kind of reminds me of Brainiac.
Well, you see the three dots on there, and it's going to remind you of Brainiac.
Yeah, true. They've drilled me well.
But, I mean, he even gets, like, the... I mean... They even give him a crazy costume with a flowing black cape and a goatee. And it's like, they really, it's like they did everything they could to show this is now, he is now a bad guy. Like, it was just so on the nose to me that it took me out of it a little bit.
It's true. And it was, as you say, it was really sudden because somebody, well, although it's forgivably so, because when you think about it, he has like all of these voices in his head.
I mean, I know that it makes, I mean, it's not that they didn't, it's not that they didn't set it up. They set it up that he already had sort of like authoritarian tendencies in the sense that he was already like a career military man who was like America first, you know, And then he was already a little unbalanced because of his months of torture and everything. And then he gets infused with this stuff and we already saw it drive one person crazy. I'm not saying it wasn't set up, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't seem sudden. Like, if they'd done it to Coulson.
Right.
Or, like, you know what I mean? No matter how well you set it up, if Coulson all of a sudden becomes a bad guy in one episode, then I don't know.
But so here's another thing that I really, really liked, and it gave me hope for the character. So good job, writers. But at first, when he got all the gravitonium, and he was asked about all the voices in his head, and he said, oh, they're just a bunch of yammering, what is it? Dead dude pansies or something like that who needed a general to keep him in line. I really liked that line
that's part of the reason why I was a little disappointed is because I thought it would be a cool twist if you're super worried for him and it turns out he has no problem handling it
exactly
because that would of be his so nice. Because of the ways in which he's a different person than Ruby was but then it just turns out to be a slightly slower burn.
Yeah.
And he's not quite as demonstrably crazy. And so
that's why I'm a little disappointed myself. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
My other minor gripe about this episode is that does it seem like Mac is mentioning his faith a lot recently? Like I guess it kind of makes sense because of what they're dealing with, you know, destiny and the end of the world and whether we have free will and, you know, whether whether you should sacrifice your morals for the greater. I mean, it makes sense, but I liked it when the fact that he had religious faith was brought up every now and then as like a shade to his character.
Right.
But now it seems like every episode he's like, you know, if you believed in God like I did, you would know that. I'm like, you know, it's coming off a little strong all of a sudden.
There are two things about Mac that rubbed me wrong in this episode. One was that I think Yo-Yo and he have had the same conversation or a different flavor of the same conversation too many times.
Her arc isn't really going anywhere. It seems like they brought her to a certain point 5 episodes ago and she's just been...
hovering there.
She just hasn't been progressing. She's just been sniping at people since then.
It's a waiting circle. But the second thing is Mac is a seasoned agent by this point. He has seen his fair share of death and I don't... And he knows what May did, which is a good point for Yo-Yo to have brought up in this episode. Like, did you have so much crap for Agent May when she decided to kill that little girl and save a million people because of her powers?
Yeah, that's why it kind of seems like it comes out of nowhere. Like, he always seemed like, and it's the reason why Coulson put him in charge that one time when I forget where he had to go or whatever. Because he does seem like, he does seem like the last honest man in S.H.I.E.L.D. Right. You know, he does seem like the one guy that would always... try to do the right thing and wouldn't compromise. But the fact that it just seems like more and more they are equating that with the fact that he has faith. It's like it's because he has faith that he is a good moral guy who wants to do the right thing. I liked it when it seemed like the two were like
a part of him
related,
but not,
but we're not, but it just seems like
Not dependent.
I'm one thing I like about this is way out of nowhere, but Kyle Rayner in the comics, it doesn't come up very often, but he is Catholic, and sometimes they show him like wearing a cross around his neck and stuff like that, and you see him praying every now and then. It only comes up like once every 5 years or something like that. But it'd be like every time if he showed up, he's like, well, you know, God would want us to... Like, no, it's just like it's an aspect of his character. It'd be like if every time Batwoman showed up, she had a line about how gay she is. It's like, no, it can be an aspect of their character, but it doesn't have to be made explicit in every single story. Yeah. Like, it's not the sum total of who they are.
Agreed.
It just feels like the writers are kind of... It's kind of, maybe it's like what we talked about with Booster Gold. Like the shortcut, the easy thing for Booster Gold is make him the idiot. It just seems like the writers are like, maybe they've got too many characters to juggle. And so they're trying to give each character like their own distinct voice in the show, and their own unique perspective.
Yeah.
But it just seems like every time they write Mac into a scene, he comes across as like the religious guy.
And I just,
and maybe I bump against that because I'm not very religious. And maybe if you were, you'd be like, oh, finally, like a guy on this show who, but I don't know, like I feel like it's just, it's an easy way to,
I mean, you could easily have a religious person on the show and have them be either a new character or somebody who has a well thought out arc.
But after 4 years,
kind of like, yeah, this is a little bit out of left field because
I just think it's, like I said, it's come up more in the past 5 episodes than it had in the past 4 years, cumulatively.
It doesn't make any sense why he would be okay toting around a shotgun axe and at the same time, like, criticize Yo-Yo for making a judgment call about a 17-year-old psychopath.
Yeah. I mean,
doesn't matter.
I can buy that, like, he's like the last honest man who always wants to do the right thing, but he also seemed like he never really had a compunction about like getting in there and mixing it up and doing what had to be done.
She murdered a whole bunch of people and she was getting ready to murder Fitz and
seems,
Simmons.
Like, it just
makes sense.
Yeah, I think what they want to do is, because going into the final few episodes, they want to put, you know, like, they want tension between Coulson and May, because Coulson's willing to let himself die and May doesn't want him to, and they want to put some tension between Fitz and Simmons, where maybe he's, you know, he's giving into the darker impulses and she doesn't want him to, although it seems like they've largely just sort of
figured that one out.
And then they want to put some tension between Mac and Yo-Yo, where she thinks that they're invincible, and but that's only because she's a pessimist,
future,
and she thinks there's no way to make things better, but he always thinks that there is, and you shouldn't have to compromise to do it. And it just, they're like you said, they're hitting the same beats over and over again, and it just, the beat that they're hitting for him happens to be one that I'm like, there should be more to this character than that.
Right.
Like, it's like every time Yo-Yo walked into a scene, she was talking about the barrio or something.
Right.
It's like, no, there's more to her, the fact that she, you know, the fact she grew up in this neighborhood and had to, like, fend for herself and stuff, she doesn't have to talk about that every time she's in the scene. That's just one aspect of her character, right?
Right.
It's like, as you know, I now have mechanical arms and I speak with a Spanish accent. It's like, no, it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not... Anyway. So I enjoyed the episode, but aspects of it rubbed me the wrong way.
Perhaps it's one of those holding pattern episodes where things are a little bit slower before the awesome season finale that is to come. Maybe that's what it is, but yeah, I agree with you. It's a little bit... weird.
So Krypton. So I enjoyed this one. I enjoyed the way that, I always like it when you start a show off or a season off and all the characters seem like they've got vastly different goals and outlooks and morals and everything, but by the end of this, the first season, they've kind of all been forced to band together for a common good.
Cute. Yeah. I like it.
And so you've got everyone from General Zod to Adam Strange to the Vexes, right? Darren Vex and Nyssa, and then you've got Lyta and her mother, and you've got, and they've all sort of gotten on board with Brainiac is coming and we need to figure out how to stop him.
Right.
And so it's cool seeing all the characters who've gone on their own individual arcs this season, more or less. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, Darren Vex has really gotten a lot of arc. He's just been like alternately scheming and obsequious, you know?
Yes.
But seeing even him come around to the same
conclusion
that he's kind of willing to toe the line a bit more than the others are, but I think even he realizes this would be bad news.
This is bad news, yeah. He knows that he's under Brainiac's boot right now.
And I thought it was a clever thing at the end where they think, oh man, we're gonna shoot him, we're gonna expose him, but then he kind of exposes himself.
That
it paints
was crazy
it as like an awesome religious thing that's happening,
yes.
And so all the citizens are on board with him now. So there's not really anything they could do to him, anything that they could show that he is that would conflict with the sort of lie disguises the truth that he's already fed them.
Exactly.
I don't know where they go from here.
That's a brilliant meisterstück, though. That's really, really good. Because now they don't have an army. It's only like 5 people on the face of all of, well, Kandor. I can't really say Krypton because they don't have any communications outside. And
I'm interested to see more about that. Because that's something that I don't think I've ever really seen in any version of Krypton. The idea that there's really discrete city-states that have very little contact or seemingly even knowledge of the others.
Yeah.
Like, they've almost become their own little worlds. Like, that's an interesting kind of thing.
So Brainiac has a very easy job. All he has to do is come in and collect all of those little tiny preset orbs as they already exist.
Yeah, it's like a sampler. It's like a sampler plate.
Yeah, you just, exactly.
You know, grab one little.
Just an amuse-bouche of Krypton. Here, candor is delicious.
The difference
time
between grabbing a little canapé and having to carve yourself a slice of cake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Canapé cake? Canapé cake? No, I screwed it up.
So Gotham.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, the main thing to talk about here is the new, whether you want to call him the Joker or not, but Jeremiah here.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
How do you feel about, I mean, I would say that Jerome kind of played it very Jokerish, right?
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of Heath Ledger in there.
Yeah.
But also, like, a lot of general Joker vibes.
I think, yes.
But the way he sort of had a growly voice and kind of smacked his lips and did certain things. I detected a lot of Heath Ledger in there. But
so Heath Ledger and Jerome, or who is this boy,
the
actor?
The new one?
Who's this actor?
Cameron Monaghan.
He's worth remembering. He's fantastic. So far, we've seen him play the crazy Joker version, his distraught brother, and the crazy brother before he turned crazy. He's a really good actor. Lots of range. I think that he and Heath Ledger were playing the Joker as written in the comics. So I don't know if I would ascribe that.
Well, I mean, the Joker in the comics is oftentimes way... I mean, yes. There's been so many different versions of the Joker. So much, though, that Grant Morrison decided to write in there that he had, like, some... I forget what the term he called it. He called it, like... metapsychosis or something, where the Joker every 10 years or so just decides to reinvent himself
rewrite
and become
himself.
A different kind of crazy.
Cool.
And that was Grant Morrison's way of saying all the different versions of Joker in the comics happened.
Except
from when he first appeared and was just shooting people left and right and was deadly serious and wasn't really making any jokes, to the crazy 50s-60s version where he was driving around the Joker mobile and just robbing banks and having a laugh with Batman and Robin, to like the version of the Killing Joke, and like they all happened. It's just the Joker, you know, has it, you know, reinvents himself every few years to become a different kind of crazy. And that was his way of saying all of this, all of the Batman history happened, and this is how we can explain it.
That's
so right. There's been different versions of Joker. I mean, the version of Jerome is kind of like, I could see like the version we just read about in Tom King's, in the DC Nation Zero storyline, where he was waiting for the wedding invitation.
Yes.
That's kind of like the way that Cameron Monaghan played Jerome, I would feel like.
Yes.
Like, but this new version, even though the last episode ended with him breaking out into crazy laughter, this new version is like there's no smile. Like he's got his skin is bleached, like but not fully, like maybe 50%. He's got like his lips are more red than usual, and he kind of has this like his eyes. I'm not sure his eyes are like sickly yellow or something.
Mm.
But he's not smiling.
Yeah,
and he's more serious. Like even there's versions of the Joker where they're kind of serious, but because he's got the sort of the rigor mortis grin on his face the whole time, and he has like a, even when he's being serious, there's like a dark sense of humor under there. But this guy is just like there's no smile.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost mechanical in his
execution.
Insanity versus demonstrative.
That's what they were going for.
I know that's what they were going for, but I'm just saying, like, if this is, and I've been seeing people say, like, oh, maybe this is just another red herring and he's not the true Joker. Sure, maybe. But if we're to assume that he is, then how do you feel about the fact that he's not, this, he seems very unlike any other version of the Joker, just in the way that his insanity manifests itself. Like, there's, I can't see this version breaking out into maniacal laughter or doing, like, He doesn't even think that he's insane. Like, the thing about most versions of the Joker is that he knows he's insane. And he wants everybody else to be insane, too, because he kind of thinks insanity is the only logical response to an insane world.
Yes.
But this version doesn't even want to admit that he's any different than he was before.
Exactly.
And I guess I've seen people make the case that maybe he isn't. Like, because Jerome said that he was always a bit of a twisted guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe he's telling the truth when he says, you know, I may look different, but I'm just the same guy. I'm just behaving the way that
I
always
wanted to.
Might as
well have doused me with water, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But you could never make that mistake with most other versions of the Joker. Like, you know, he might have been evil. He might have been like a certain kind of psychotic before he fell into the acid. But there's no mistaking the version he is after from the version he is before. Like, it's a clean break in a lot of behavioral ways. Whereas this one seems like you could kind of buy it when he says, yeah, I'm not really that different. I just look a little different. That's very different than any other
version. You could buy it. You know why? Because he lived in that bunker for his entire life. So as brilliant as he was, he may have gone a little bit stir crazy. And who's that lady that's with him? Because now she's taking on kind of the Harley function.
Yeah, I think they're having a little fun with that. I don't think she's... I thought... Isn't
What's
that,
her name? Echo?
That's what he called her, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was his...
Henchwoman.
Well, his bodyguard woman,
yeah,
right? Like the
I
woman
remember.
That was guarding
in bunker,
him in
yeah.
the bunker,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure they're going to actually
did
do much.
Did they give her a crazy gas? Because originally, this is exactly bringing up to your point, though, because she didn't take any gas. She's just working with him now, and she easily shot some people. She's, fighting off bad guys is one thing, and being a good defender, a good guard is one thing. But she outright murders some innocent people in this one, and is totally fine with it. So what kind of shenanigans were they up to before he had been doused with gas? That brings that question.
Get back to my question, though, because I it's not that I don't appreciate the performance. I think it's really captivating. But if this turns out to be the definitive version of the Joker for this show, how will you feel about the official Gotham version of the Joker being someone who never smiles and never laughs?
It's weird. That's my take.
Are you okay with it?
I mean, in so much as I'm okay with all the... I know, but I've sort of adopted it. We're watching Gotham. It's going to be strayed from the canonical, most commonplace representations of all the characters. So, I mean, I've gotten over my issues with how they treated Barbara, how they changed Penguin, how they changed, everybody. Actually, Penguin is the closest to his own persona as anybody else. But... So I mean, I'm good at adopting the changes in the characters, but yeah, I do acknowledge this is a weird change, but you know, I'm okay with it.
I think if you just, I'm not, I'd and again, I'm not saying I have a problem with it, but I think if he had the smile,
yeah, he then, shows it every now and then. I mean, though. I think I want to see more. That's
I
what.
Think if he had the smile but was still acting deadly serious all the time, that juxtaposition would feel Jokerish. It's a different kind of Jokerish, but it would feel Jokerish. Whereas now he just seems like a pale guy who's just really creepy.
But at the very end, that's exactly what he did. He was very sane when he killed those people, and then he burst out into laughter.
I don't remember him bursting out into laughter. You sure you're not thinking of the previous episode when he first got dosed? Because that was the very last shot of the previous episode when he first got dosed by the present that he opened up. I don't recall him.
I thought when he killed when Echo killed those two guards and he walks in and he said
him.
Whatever his
I don't remember
last
him
line
laughing.
Was.
From when he started maybe to I'm wipe wrong. the skin yeah. paint off of his face to mm-hmm. reveal his white skin, I don't recall him laughing or even cracking a smile. He was just completely serious and clinical about everything he was doing. Mm. And that's creepy, but is it jokery? I don't really know. But anyway. So Supergirl. Mm. So this one was I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, the third world killer.
Yeah, I like how the Brainiac didn't phase win. Sorry, that was a cute moment for me.
I think that's just there because they don't want to do the makeup every time.
Absolutely.
I think that's
makes
the only reason
sense.
That's there, but that's fine. I mean, that's,
absolutely.
You know,
no, it makes perfect sense.
I don't have a problem
with
that.
I'm glad they did that.
I mean, it's the same reason why they don't have Jean be in his Martian form in every single scene, even though there's not really much reason why he wouldn't be because everybody's accepted him, but it's just that would kill the budget of the show. Not that putting a little bit of makeup on Jesse Rath for 5 minutes is, you know, but
it's
why do it if you don't have to? Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I don't really have a lot to say about it. I feel like we've seen this tension between can we redeem the world killers and can we not before.
Yes.
But
I've liked it, though. I liked this iteration of it because now you have somebody who is kind of rotten on the inside before they have.
Yeah, that was the interesting.
That was
the
cool
interesting
thing to
do. I forgot about that. And I was even okay with, as much as I'm like, Legionnaire's willing to kill, don't really like it, but... Again, this is like a proto version of the Legion, and Saturn Girl. I don't know where I got. I mean, I've read a lot of. I guess I've read a fair amount of Legion stories. There's huge gaps in my Legion knowledge, but I've read representative stuff from most of the major eras. So I guess I do know whereof I speak. And I don't know where I can't point to a single example of where I got this impression. But she always came across. She's very empathetic and nurturing in a way. But she's also very much like. Do what has to be done type. Like I remember when and this was like in the 70s, you know, when the characters were just starting to have their own distinct personalities, when she was made the leader of the team. And I think that was because they used to have the fans vote on who would become the new leader of the team in the comic.
Did they really? And people voted for Saturn Girl?
I think that was the first fan voting. And either way, she definitely became the leader. And
I just say woohoo to the 70s crowd for being down with the patriarchy.
And she wasn't I don't recall her being the best leader necessarily, but she was not written as like, oh, I'm in the way that you could see it being like coming out of the 60s. Yeah. It was like, oh, I'm a woman. I don't know how to be tough in this man's world, right? Like you could kind of see it in 10 years earlier. Or probably would have been written that way, but no, she was like she was tough and she was hard enough. And then later, when she and Lightning Lad had their kids, and she was always like such a fierce warrior protecting them, and she got like a buzz cut basically, and she was a real badass. Like I always like this isn't a version you see like in the cartoons or most of the other like short appearances in live action very much. But to me, like looking back, she always between the three founders, I actually in my head I picture her being the one that would be willing to go the farthest to. to do what needs to be done further than Lightning Lad or Cosmic Boy.
Isn't she doing that here?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I kind of like that. I wondered whether you would have a problem with it because you're this version of the Legion. You're like, it doesn't seem like the Legion because they, you know, they come from a dark future and they're not wearing the costumes and they were inspired by Supergirl and not Superman. So I thought this might be another thing that you're like, oh, why does Saturn Girl have to be? I mean, have to have dark hair and be married to Mon-El instead of Lightning Lad.
Aside from the cosmetic differences, meaning like, yeah, she's married to Mon-El. She looks a little different than she does in the comics. She's not full on like alien. You remember the
that was the only version that ever looked different though.
Oh, really? The most common version that I saw
in the comics. This is the thing. Is it? I mean, they talk about the diversity of the Legion, but up until like the 70s and really the 80s, it was just like a bunch of white kids. It's just that some of them were white kids that happened to have different colored skin, but they still had Caucasian features, like Brainiac and Chameleon Boy were really just white people with
different colored skin.
Yes. But they didn't have, you know, African looking features or Asian looking features. They were Caucasian kids that were just like aliens, you know, but they were alien white kids, basically, right?
Yeah.
So they made her, but then when they did the show, they gave her a little bit of a different look.
Like
they
a
gave,
weird they willowy
gave,
look.
They gave Phantom Girl a different look where she had these big round eyes with these small pupils. Like, does she even have any eyelids? Because she's like, her eyes look really weird, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So they want to make them each look a little different for the show. But in the comics, she just looks human. Like you've seen her in the recent, not a lot, but just like in Arkham.
No,
she just looks like, that's the reason why nobody knows who she is and doesn't believe her story because she just looks like
a regular person.
A regular blonde girl, right?
Yeah.
But I did like that.
Yeah, I do too. I want to see where it's going with it. And I think that it was nice that she and Supergirl had a conversation, multiple conversations over this one. But at the end, Supergirl started doubting her own approach because she's like, it failed. Like, I wasn't able to reach her. But that's because Supergirl is always going to feel that way when she can't reach somebody. Because not everybody will be wanting to listen to her Pollyanna-ish view on life.
Yeah, to me, Supergirl and Superman, I guess I can buy more with Supergirl than with Superman. But there's a difference between beating yourself up because you didn't do everything you could have done, even if we, the reader, know they did everything they could have. They're never going to feel like they did enough versus feeling like maybe they took the wrong tactic by trying to believe in the person. Like, Superman would never be like, oh, maybe I was wrong to try to help that person. No, he would never say that, right? He'd be like, I should have done more. I should have tried harder to help them because I know
what if I said this?
Because there's always still good in people. I just wasn't able to, I just didn't work hard enough to reach it, right? That would be the way in which they would beat themselves up. Supergirl, I can buy a little more. I'm like, you know, she's young, she's starting out. And so So Flash.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this episode too, but I don't have a lot to say about it. I think it's finally time that the wife at the end to realize that the Thinker was no good.
Yeah, about time.
It's like early on in the relationship, they're moving in together and she finds like his crazy manifesto.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like I'm a little disappointed with the motivations of the Thinker here, that we learn that his grand plan is to just like make everybody dumb again.
Yeah.
Because first of all, what does that even mean? It's not like, I mean,
so we're all troglodytes again, we don't understand fire.
But what does that mean? Like bringing us back to when we were like Neanderthals or something? Like we had
I think that's what it
is. But unless you're like gonna shrink our neocortex.
Yeah.
Like the things that make like those millions of years of evolution. Like unless you're going to literally change the size of our brains, like you wipe, if you were to wipe someone's brain so they're a clean slate, that doesn't reduce their intelligence.
Function,
they could still learn those things again.
Exactly.
I mean, if you would think that it would kind of make more sense to do like a planet-wide EMP so that no technology can function again.
Yeah.
And come up with some crazy make-em-up science thing
Fight
where
Club
like
it.
No the electricity just won't work on the planet Earth anymore for 1,000 years. Like he's done something so that no electromagnetic fields can form or something, so technology is now impossible and humanity has to live a different life or something.
Right.
That would, to me, would make more sense. But just making everybody dumber, how? Like by shrinking, really, like,
it doesn't make any sense.
Altering their physical brains would be the only way to do it. And the other thing is, too, is like technology.
Why do they call it enlightenment? That's not enlightenment.
I think that's supposed to be ironic. I think that's supposed to be a surprise to us because it's ironic that he would consider that to be the truly enlightened state of man. And that part I like. I like that his view on mankind.
But he wanted to do it on everybody, including his wife, by the way.
Sure,
and then
because
rule
now,
over all
because
of them.
He's no, that part I like though, because he sees himself as so far above everybody else now that she's like one of the ants, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like remember the recent I forget what it was,
the recent Brain and
exactly
Mala
the Brain
story.
And Mala, right? Yeah, where like they were thick as thieves at the beginning, but he evolved so much that now Mala's just another
you know, nothing. Yeah.
But the other point I was going to make about his plan is that he says he wants to. He says that technology is the evil thing. Like humanity has gone astray because of technology. But again, this is why I think it would have made more sense if his beef was with like electronics it specifically, because it's like, what technology? Like, you go back far enough, I mean, a spear is technology. It's not what we think of these days as electronic technology, but it's spear, bow and arrow, fire, like...
Wheel.
It's like, is he... Because it makes him look dumb, because it's like, does he really think that humanity was perfectly peaceful and serene before we had technology? No, we were like beating each other over the heads with clubs to steal fire and shelter and food and mates and all sorts of other things. So we're just going to go back to... I mean... I feel like it could. There was so easily there. Like if they'd made it like more specifically like electronics or something, and if they'd said, well, humanity will still have basic tools, but you can't destroy the whole Earth with a spear, whereas you can with a nuclear bomb or something.
Right.
So it would at least stop humanity from destroying itself. Like one or two lines of dialogue or one or two small changes like that would have made it make so much sense. But now it just makes him look like an idiot
who wants to rule over a bunch of troglodytes.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know about that. But Arrow, this one was a really good episode. Yeah. So I'm not going to try to say the name of this episode because it was just the long docket number for Oliver's trial. And I'm looking at this docket number and I'm like, is this a reference? Because it's like 11-1941. I'm like, Green Arrow was probably created around 1941. I could have looked this up. I didn't. But is 11-1941 the date of his published first comic? And if so, what is 73? Like, I don't know.
Old he is?
It would have been... No, that wouldn't compute. If that were it, it would be 77 now.
Yeah, 77.
I don't know. I need to look that up, but if something tells me it means something. Anyway, I really enjoyed this one. It seemed, in a way, it seemed a little too easy that the human target just shows up and bails them out, but then they're almost in trouble again, and then he bails them out again, except this time it works.
Right.
I liked the ebb and flow. I did like it because it's not like the whole season has been about his upcoming trial.
Right.
It's like the threat of prosecution has been there off and on, but it's really just he was really only arrested. Well, I guess he was arrested way back when, but he was really only like in serious trouble at the end of the. Well, I mean, it's not like he was on the lam; he was out on bail.
Understood, but I mean, Diaz, he was really like apprehended
to get him his bail revoked and have his trial date moved up.
I'm saying apprehended both by Diaz and then by the system because Diaz has fingers in all these pies and he's able to use the law against him. You know,
but it is kind of I like that it kind of comes full circle in a way, and that all the even though his friends have, I mean. Abandon him is an uncharitable way of looking at it, but more or less. And yet, in his hour of greatest need, it's because Diggle goes out and finds the human target, and Renee has the idea to use him at the end, and Felicity and Dinah and Curtis are also there cheering him on. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
They don't want to work with him, but they don't want to see him hung for something he didn't do.
I liked the pathos of it. I liked Stephen Amell's performance in the few scenes when it seemed like he knew that he was done for, basically. And Felicity probably also knew, and William probably also knew, but he was trying to kind of stay strong for them, but you could see his facade kind of cracking a little bit. And I like his motivation. It's like, it's not that he's terrified to go to jail. He even says, like, he could probably break out of jail, no problem. But then he'd be
on the
a fugitive, and their lives would be in danger, too. Like,
they'd have targets painted on their backs.
If it's confirmed that he's the Green Arrow, then everybody's lives are in danger, and no one could have a normal life anymore. And and he wants that for himself eventually, but moreover, he wants it for his wife and for his son. Mm-hmm. So I really liked all that. And I didn't see the human target thing coming. For a second, I thought they might... when Tommy Merlin showed up, I thought, we talked about this off mic. It's like, oh, did they somehow find a way to like revive the Tommy Merlin from Earth X, who we saw in the crossover? Because that's the only, you know, Tommy Merlin we've seen aside from like Dream or flashback since he died in the first season.
Right. He was the general in the Earth X fight against
He was Earth X Prometheus.
Yeah.
He was in the Prometheus outfit. And then I thought, well, could it be Ralph? Because this is the exact same trick they pulled on Flash to get Barry out of jail. But then I remembered that currently his body is being used for other purposes. Right. So that wouldn't really work unless
I called the human target. That was my first and only thought. And
I'm surprised you even remembered who that character was, though.
He only appeared once
on the show, and you didn't see.
I saw him once in the show and once in the comics, pretending to be Bruce Wayne. So no, pretending to be the Arrow, actually. No,
I don't recall him showing. When did he show up in the comics that you read? I don't remember that at all.
No, I'm thinking of Hush.
You're thinking of when Hush, because Hush looks like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, never mind. But anyway. Yeah.
No, but I really enjoyed it. And so now there's only a couple of episodes left. I mean, throughout the whole episode, the other thing I was thinking was throughout the whole episode, I mean, I don't know. I've always thought it's a little unrealistic that Laurel would be so afraid of she's like, oh, I've worked with bad people before, yeah, and he's worse. I'm like, is he really worse than Zoom?
Yeah,
really?
Right?
Like, first of all, not nearly as powerful. That goes without saying. But just in terms of like how evil he is he more evil than Zoom? I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of hard to compare different kinds of evil supervillains, but I don't really think he's worse than Zoom. Like, he's not, doesn't seem more murderous or more capricious or more unreasonable than Zoom. He's not unreasonable. He just has his own goals that he's working towards.
No,
Zoom
was
like a psychopath.
I think I can understand what she's coming from, because even though Zoom was a psycho, he had a code by which he worked on. And Diaz's code is kill anything that bothers him.
Yeah, but Diaz is understandable. Zoom was insane by the end. Like, it was hard to predict what he was going to do, whereas Diaz wants something very selfish, but the steps he will take to get there are very predictable. Once you know that he doesn't have a code, it becomes very easy to predict what Diaz is going to do. Whereas with Zoom, it was very hard.
Don't forget, it was Killer Frost that was working with Zoom in the
it was also Black Siren. That's how she got to this Earth. Zoom recruited all the metas from Earth 2 and brought them over here to terrorize Earth 1.
Yeah.
That was how she got here in the first place. Or at least that was the first time we saw her. I think she might have come back later on her own or something. But that was when she was first introduced. It was an episode of The Flash.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was like, I've always been little. I'm like, really? But even that aside, I'm like, you're a metahuman and he's not. Like, you walk into a room and use your scream, you could liquefy him in 2 seconds.
No kidding.
So it doesn't really make that much sense that she'd be that afraid of him.
Yeah.
So, and then finally she does that at the end, but she super telegraphs it. So he uses his little dampening thing.
Yeah.
To and I'm like, okay.
To shut her up just
the fact
in
that
time.
He has that makes it make a bit more sense, but she didn't know he had that. So why was she so afraid of him all along?
Yeah.
So I guess you could say, like he's threatening Quentin and so on, who she's come to care about. But if she kills him in 2 seconds flat, she has no reason to think that he has some like dead man's contingency plan where if he dies and he doesn't, you know, make a phone call every 24 hours, then Quentin gets shot by a sniper or something. Like,
right.
We have no reason to believe he's planned that far ahead for his own death.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if he'd said that he'd done something like that,
one or two more lines of dialogue,
like, by the way, if anything happens to me, all of your friends die or something like that, then that would make more sense.
Yeah, because that was the initial threat, right? Like, and then it sort of faded from...
Like, he was threatening Oliver with the same thing, but the thing with Oliver was that he just couldn't get to him. That was why he did the whole thing when he was high on the vertigo, why he raided the police station and by himself, was because that was the one place he knew Diaz was going to be at a certain time.
Right.
The whole thing was just getting to him. But Laurel's with him all the time.
Yeah.
She doesn't have that difficulty, so she could just kill him if she was that afraid. She's not like she's worried about killing. She killed people for him.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. That seemed like I can see what they're trying to do, but it just feels one or two more lines of dialogue to set up why she's unable to just take that step because he's thought of it or something. Like, it wouldn't be that hard. And you can come up with explanations in your head, but unless there's on screen, it's really just your own headcanon.
Exactly. There's really no leash that he has to tug her with.
I mean, he's threatening. He's imposing.
Like
Earth 1 Laurel, who didn't have a metahuman ability, would have been a different story. But she didn't even need to go into the building.
Nope.
She just knows he's in
she
there.
Could
she
level
could bring
the
whole building down in 2 seconds.
Exactly.
I don't know. That didn't make much sense to me.
No,
but again,
right.
But now that she knows that he has this thing, and now that he knows to like use it all the time, and to not let her get too close or to keep an eye on her. I mean, you could say, well, maybe he always had people watching her, and if she looks like she's going to pull something, they would have shot her or something. But again, you know, that's just us
retroactively
making it make sense. Anyway, I really enjoyed the episode, but the one or two things like that.
I'm
like, why?
Yeah, exactly.
And then when he's coming out of the courtroom and Dinah and Diggle just start punching him in the face. I'm like,
you're like,
why didn't
someone
trick you? He's right there. Just punch him a lot.
Yeah.
But of course, that's the heat of the moment. And then as soon as
that calms down, there are consequences.
That would work if they killed him immediately again. But if you don't kill him immediately, then he's like, if anything happens to me, my guys know to kill your guys. And, you know, so it only works if you do it quick.
And the weird thing is that the people that are on his payroll would instantly have their paychecks cut. And they'd be in trouble because they'd be exposed.
Well, the other thing, like in certain cases with certain kinds of bad guys, you believe that if the head bad guy is killed by the hero, then his underlings will never stop trying to get revenge for him, or another one will rise up to take his place or something.
Yeah, but there's feel no that successor. Here. Exactly,
he hasn't bred a lot of loyalty into his followers.
His spiderweb.
He got
is
where
very
he
small.
Is by killing, by exactly. betraying and killing other people. He doesn't operate in a world of loyalty. If he died, everybody else would just scatter like roaches. Like they'd carve up his domain, or they'd take as much money as they could and flee the city. Mm-hmm. So someone like Ra's al Ghul or whatever, you can't just kill him because, well, I guess Oliver did, but I mean...
Well, yeah, there's been I know what you mean.
There's been other villains in these shows where if you just kill them, someone else will...
Rise to the ranks. There's a successor. Like, there's a network.
There'll be a mob. Or they do the whole thing, oh, if you kill him, then there'll be like a gang war, which would be worse than the devil you know.
But there's
you know?
Also like an ideology associated with the League of Shadows, you know? So they look for a leader and there is a leader. There's Talia, there's Nyssa, there are, you know, underling minions to report to, and then there's an ideology there. But here it's just a whole bunch of thugs controlling other thugs. It's not...
Well, last season with Prometheus, the whole thing was, it's not like Oliver... I mean, they had a bunch of fights, but there were several times where Oliver could have killed him. The whole crux of the final episode was that Oliver didn't want to kill him.
Right.
Because he wanted to prove to himself and prove to Prometheus that he wasn't the kind of person that
he wasn't a murderer by, you know, to solve problems.
He can kill and he does kill, but sure. He doesn't have to kill. I mean, it's a gray line, but it was one that he was kind of trying to draw for himself. That was what made that whole season so interesting. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his ability, his morality that was in question.
Yes.
Whereas here I feel like they haven't constructed it quite as carefully, and you can sort of see where they could get him pretty easily if they really put their mind to it. But anyway. And that's it for all of our shows.
Yeah, it's a whole brilliant batch of shows. So if you'd like to reach out to us, we have an email address, mailbag@smartspodcast.com. Our website is www.smartspodcast.com. Our Twitter handle is @smartspodcast, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/smartspodcast.
Okay, now you got to give me the other 142 potential acronyms that you came up with before.
Okay, sesquicentennial, martyrs are really terrific sometimes. That's one.
Nine.